Welcome to the CCTA Wake-Up Call Show. Glad you could join us. We're going to go around robin on a whole lot of different topics today. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
Well, again, welcome. Now, so we have, where are we going to start?
We're going to start with America First Legal suing John Roberts. And the question here is,
and he's also suing the chief of the administrative.
Yes, Robert J. Conrad, who serves as the director of the administrative office of the U.S. courts.
Just to clarify, who is America First?
It's an organization co-founded by Stephen Miller.
Okay,
the bald-headed guy that's always out there.
We like him.
Giving him heck.
And what? At the heart of this question is whether or not they have to honor a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act request. And John Roberts evidently feels that they don't have to, and America First Legal feels that they do have to.
And so the question remains, what are they trying to FOIA? And according to an article I read, they're trying to FOIA communications between those two that they're suing, Roberts and the other guy. And Sheldon Whitehouse and Hank Johnson. Hank Johnson of, will Guam tip over if we put more troops on the island?
And Sheldon Whitehouse, the Rhode Island senator who was funneling all kinds of USAID money to his wife.
Yeah.
Nothing to see here, folks.
No, they're accusing them of working somehow behind the scenes.
For court decisions?
I don't know.
Communications, I think, is what you from the Freedom of Information, what you're saying.
Well, but theoretically,
not court communications, because those are public.
Theoretically, if you work
shadowy,
if you work for the government, any communication you have on government matters is supposed to be transparent, isn't it?
It's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Federal Records Act.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is something under the table. I mean, why would Roberts be talking to Hank Johnson? Number one, Hank Johnson's dumber than a box of rocks, so what could he possibly have to say that would interest John Roberts?
Well, you know, we look at I'm going to go back. How many private email accounts did President Biden have?
Or Hillary.
Or Obama. So why would we think that the federal court would be any different?
So dealing with this might be another step toward bringing us to the government transparency that we need.
But to be fair, I would think that any of those politicians probably has a pseudonym or another email account. I bet they all do, because they all want to have a way they can talk without being public knowledge. So I guess I don't find that as big of a deal. I know it's not what the law says, but I can just thinking about the small boards that we have here and the open meetings laws and how you're not allowed to meet with more than a certain number of them, because then it's creating a coup effect.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see where they would all have a private email that they would use specifically with friends or family. The trick some of the time could be if it's on government equipment or not, and that was part of the Hillary thing.
I know, but you're ignoring the obvious. What would John Roberts have to say to Sheldon Whitehouse and Hank Johnson, both Democrats?
Yeah.
And Johnson or Roberts is not in our good graces. What is going on that America First Legal obviously knows something about?
Yeah.
And they're trying to prove.
And
what's
also,
going on.
You have the situation, particularly with Hillary, with the private email accounts where confidential information was being passed in email accounts that were not sufficiently secured.
Well, she even had private servers
in her bathroom.
Yeah,
and I know all that. I just think, to be fair, we should acknowledge that I'm sure that there are conservatives that have that too. And I'm thinking about some of our rhinos. I'm thinking about Lindsey Graham and all of his shenanigans behind the line. I can't believe for one minute he's not colluding with Democrats on some of his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying that I think corruption can be universal.
That's true.
I still have the capacity to have outrage. I'm sorry. You guys are big cynics. I'm outraged that John Roberts, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, would be talking to these lowlifes about anything.
Well, that has to do, I suspect that outrage has to do with your legal background.
Yes, because it's very disappointing if the Chief Justice is comporting himself in this manner.
He shouldn't be accessible to a senator or House members.
Nope.
I agree.
Now, the time that I saw it as being slightly different, and I'm going to say Ronald Reagan and
Tip O'Neill
were best of buddies after hours. They go out and have a couple of drinks together, but they're not negotiating a contract there. They may be talking business or whatever, or attitudes, but they were.
I don't have a problem with that. I think that was a good thing.
But neither one of them had judicial power over the other or over the nation and had a set of judicial ethics to deal with.
Well, that's true. You'd also be curious about bank records to see if there was any payments going on.
Now, you know, we're going down the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court declares something unconstitutional, now, we've seen this actually within North Carolina also. If the Supreme Court declares something unconstitutional, and then 37 states pass it as this will be constitutional, who wins? The 37 states better win. Better, if we're going to add it into our Constitution as an amendment, Supreme Court may rule that something's unconstitutional. If 37 states finally get together and pass it as an amendment, that it is constitutional,
as an amendment to the U.S. Constitution?
To the U.S. Constitution.
Okay, you didn't make that clear.
Yeah, the U.S. Constitution. Then the Supreme Court in that case, sorry, folks, go and blow your smoke somewhere else.
Yeah, well, the chance of getting that done are zero to none. In this environment, 37 states agree on something that's controversial? I don't think so.
They have a hard time agreeing that we're supposed to breathe air, yeah.
They don't even know what men and women are.
Can't agree on producing proof that you're a citizen before you vote.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Now where are we going to go?
I want to talk a minute about the South African refugees that President Trump has let into the country. My understanding is there aren't a lot of them. I think there are about 50 of them, give or take a bit.
59 families, I believe.
And women and children, not just military-aged males.
Yes. And the president of South Africa is saying, well, there's no problem here. Why are they leaving? But that's not necessarily the case, because what is going on there is that because apartheid was in effect in South Africa for so long and created a lot of bad will, and because most of the land is owned by the South Africans, who are Dutch, who were the settlers there, the government has said that you can take the land from them without compensation, and a lot of them have been killed in that process. So that's why they're leaving. And the Episcopal Church has shut down its refugee program, saying they refuse to be involved with bringing over white supremacists. Well, the white supremacy was three generations ago. This is not trying to protect your farm when someone is coming in to kill you is not white supremacy. It's protecting private property rights, and the government of South Africa has chosen not to do that right now. So that is why they're leaving. And to me, it says bad things about the church that they're not willing to support these refugees who are fleeing to save their lives.
Well, what about the fact that these people coming in as refugees have done it legally and have been vetted? We know exactly who they are. Why is that a problem?
Well, the problem is that's not a problem.
It's not a problem.
Right. That's the problem.
Right. That's right.
Okay, now we've decided that issue.
The problem is they don't fit the profile of what they consider
not
a
black.
Refugee.
Let's
That's
just,
right.
Let's yep. just cut to the chase. They're not black. Therefore, people of color. Therefore, they cannot. White people cannot be refugees. That is the narrative.
Right.
With all of these refugee settlement, whatever.
You know,
well, the other thing in this case is, at least from as we understand with the Episcopal Church, because we've been around this go round before, is they're not making money bringing these people into this country.
Well, not anymore. Not since USAID got gutted.
Yeah, but then we've got all these rhinos who won't sign on to make the USAID cuts permanent. So what
yes.
was there, 26?
Yet.
Yeah, I still think that they're bought and paid for.
They're doing tax cuts right now.
It's interesting to me. I remember in the 1950s when the Russians came into Hungary, I believe it was Hungary, and we took in a bunch of Hungarian refugees who were fleeing communism. They happened to be white, and nobody cared. We took them in, we took care of them,
yeah,
and we
well,
saved their lives.
That was a long time
How
ago.
How things have changed.
In another galaxy far, far away.
Once upon a time.
Yes.
And that's really funny that you say that.
Live long and prosper, Glenn.
Live long and prosper. Okay. I'm going to bring up a subject. Who is it? Victor David Hansen has accused the media of jumping the shark. And what does that mean? Well, he says that all the Elon Musk news has been unfavorable. I think he said there was something like 85% or 89% of the reporting on Elon Musk was negative. And the reporting on Kilmar Abrego Garcia, it was all favorable news. Now, he is the one that they're trying to export to, El Salvador?
The Maryland man.
El Salvador.
Yeah.
But trying to get him back.
They're trying to get him back, but he's the one that's, injured his...
He's the Maryland dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's just saying the judges that he sees in the news, they're protecting the illegals, that the John Fetterman was a good guy until he started to support Israel. Now he's a bad guy and can do nothing right. Is the media a little bit biased?
Oh, surely not.
Well, it's interesting that they're accusing John Fetterman now of being senile, and they never bothered to accuse Joe Biden of that.
No, he just stutters. He's not senile.
Folks, we're going to take a break on that. We'll be right back. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said East 70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at East 70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms. New guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at East 70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If East 70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, E70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than E70 Pond. Of course, E70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. E70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to their sponsors and supporters. We're going to head off into Trump land, I guess, right?
Yes.
Trump land. We live in Trump land.
Well, let's start off with what are we getting as a gift from Qatar?
Saudi Arabia. Qatar.
What is the gift?
It's Air Force One.
$400 million airplane.
There's a lot of stuff about this. And the fact is that Boeing was asked to build this plane 8 years ago.
And approved.
And they haven't been able to do it. And
I heard the reason they haven't been able to do anything right is their DEI policies.
Oh, okay.
They descended into the corporate DEI thicket, and they haven't been able to climb out. And so Starliner, they couldn't bring the astronauts back.
Mm-hmm.
Their planes seemed to burst into flames or, you know.
Why didn't they just give the contract to Elon Musk? He probably could have done. But now there's an article in the Daily Caller. Alan Dershowitz has some comments on this. And he says, his comment is, the gift is to America. It's not to President Trump. And even if he puts it in his presidential library, he does not own the presidential library, the Smithsonian does. And just for the record, Air Force One at the time of Ronald Reagan is in Ronald Reagan's presidential library. Yeah. You can go on board. We've been on board.
Well, I don't care about that if it ends up in the library or not. It's going to the Air Force.
That's
so
right.
Let the Air Force dispose of it when Boeing's Air Force One comes back online, if it ever does. And then the Air Force will have to dispose of it.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is the Qatar airplane a Boeing?
Yes.
It's a Boeing 747.
So is it new? Is it old?
No, it's used, but it's newer than what they've got.
Okay. Is there a way to vet this plane to make sure that it is not bugged or...
Oh, yeah.
I believe they would...
Or safety hazard.
Yeah.
They've been doing a lot of refurbing of parts of the aircraft.
I'm sure they can do that quite well.
They're going to have to install all the special electronics that the president needs to be in touch.
Okay.
And so they're basically going to strip it down to the boards and build it back up.
But they can do that quicker than Boeing can build a plane, obviously.
The irony is the vice president aircraft right now, I believe, was bought from foreign governments. It's also Boeing aircraft, but all the fasten your seatbelt signs and the no smoking signs are all in foreign languages.
Oh, that's funny.
So it's not like it's the first time. And this is just another much ado about nothing that the Democrats want to smear Trump with.
Well, they're saying it's a bribe. What would Qatar have to bribe Trump about?
Well, the thing that you need to keep in perspective, I think, when you deal with Trump is that before he was president, he was a successful international businessman. And he dealt with these companies, these countries. And he built things in these countries. And he has a relationship with these countries.
I don't think you're making an argument that's helping our side. You're making the other side's argument that because he has relations with these countries, they lie outside of his role as president. And therefore, there's something nefarious about him.
He had those relations before he was president. He's not running Trump Enterprises anymore.
I think he did it properly. When he was asked about that aircraft, he quoted Sam Snead, the golfer, And the golfer, Sam Snead, says when you're up on the green and they do a gimme, they give you the shot, don't take it. Take that free shot.
No, you got it backwards.
You don't have to take the gimme.
Take the gimme.
You don't have to do the putt.
Right.
Take the gimme and take the gift.
Well, I might look at it as Budget Reduction Act. Look how much money I can save the country if we don't build that Boeing plane.
Well, Trump made that comment. It's saving us money. Why wouldn't we accept it? Yeah. He says it'd be stupid to not take it.
I agree. I think as long as it's safe and vetted, I'm all for somebody giving this country something back.
In all probability, he won't be able to use this aircraft. It won't be configured until after he's about to leave office.
Probably.
Like I mentioned when we were off the air, Emily Campagna was on Greg Gutfeld the other night, and she was asked for her legal opinion about it because she is an attorney. And she said, we've taken gifts before. We took the Statue of Liberty from France. So we have precedent.
Now, I want to talk about Trump's visit in Saudi Arabia because I think it's been amazing. They had some kind of a welcoming ceremony. Yeah.
The carpet was a beautiful lavender.
And they played God Bless the USA when he was ready to take the stage. And when he left the stage, they played YMCA. And
the pomp and circumstance was fun.
And they looked like, everybody looked like they were enjoying it.
Something that I noticed was when he was talking, that he talked more personal in some cases where he said, I knew him before, mm-hmm. I worked with them, you know, before I was in politics. So bringing that into the picture, I think, was enlightening. But also he said, we are America, we do what we do, we're for ourselves and our allies, and we always will be. So there was that, yeah, we're friends, but they know where they stand. Mm-hmm. My first commitment is to my country.
Which is as it should be.
Well, the article that I read about it this morning, and I'm not sure if it was by Victor Davis Hanson or not, but said essentially that Trump's speech is the death knell for progressive neocon international relations, that we're stopping all that stuff.
Yeah.
There won't be any more drag shows in Saudi Arabia, and there won't be, you know, any more LGBTQ in some other country where we're trying to undercut their communities. It's let's all get along and make money.
Well, they have a form of government, and we have a form of government. We have to learn how to work with them, not to change their government, but just to work with them.
I think that's what he said.
That's what he said.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that was interesting about that was he had a meeting the next day with Ahmed al-Shara, who is the president of Syria, who is former terrorist. This is not someone you'd want in your living room. But so why is he meeting with this guy?
He let go of the sanctions on Syria, too.
Yes. And there was a post on Twitter that I loved because he pointed out the advantages of doing this. Syria has been an Iranian-Russian proxy for days. For decades.
Days.
Well, days, too. This reverses that. It cuts off the resupply for Hezbollah because Syria is going to be watched now if they want to behave. He's trying to get Syria to join the Abraham Accords. If Syria joins the Abraham Accords and acts accordingly, now you got to take Taqiya into consideration here, which is the Islamic idea that it's okay to lie for the sake of Islam. It's okay to lie to the infidels. So if the president of Syria is totally lying, then we're back where we started. But if he manages to isolate Syria from Turkey and from Russia, and get it working toward peace without killing the Druze and the Jews, then he will have really accomplished something. If that is possible. I don't know if that is possible, but at least he's trying.
How is he going to accomplish all that by releasing all the sanctions?
Well, I suspect that there are some rather large strings tied to the release of the sanctions. The sanctions can be put right back on very quickly.
Well, the article didn't say anything about that, so.
But
I don't understand. I don't pretend to understand what the meeting was with this fellow and why.
Well, that bothered
the sanctions.
That bothered me too. But if it isolates Syria from Turkey and Russia,
how does releasing sanctions isolate them from anybody?
Because
it isolates them from us.
No. Doesn't.
Yeah, we're releasing all our hold on them.
That's what I mean. We're releasing that. That they're going to look at that as a good thing.
Yeah, they will, huh?
Well, we shall see.
Yeah.
We'll see where
like
we are.
Like Iran did when Biden released the sanctions on Iran.
Well, I'm willing to watch this for about a month.
What was that? Trust but verify?
Yes.
Is that what Reagan said?
Yes. I want to watch this for about a month and see where it goes. If it stops the killing of the Druze and if it stops the killing of the Jews, then we have accomplished something. If that continues, then we haven't.
All right.
What are we? Well, I think
birthright citizenship.
Birthright citizenship. Okay, and that's a case that's coming up
this week.
This week
in front of the Supreme Court.
And actually, the ruling on the birthright citizenship is probably not the important thing, but the important thing is the involvement of the district judges in
nationwide injunctions.
Nationwide injunctions when they're district judges.
Right.
Do they have that right?
Apparently, this case will solve that issue too, because one of the judges, one of the first judges, and I think he was out in California somewhere, of course, or Portland. Trump issued an EO, an executive order, about birthright citizenship. There shall be no more birthright citizenship. And the judge did a nationwide injunction. So once they rule on that nationwide injunction, it's going to hopefully get rid of all of them.
And this is in spite of Justice Roberts not ruling in his own section of the government, the judges.
Now, federal district courts have issued 37 nationwide injunctions during the Trump administration.
Yeah, more than any other president ever in the
more than all
of our nation,
all of them apparently
in the history of our nation.
But some of that seems so subjective to me because in the past, when there has been injunctions like the boys and the girls bathrooms, it only applied to certain states. It didn't apply to all of them. So I don't understand how.
To be continued.
Yeah.
To be continued.
To be continued.
Okay, that's the teaser. Take a moment to listen to our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in Newbern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in Newbern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, just people in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, you wanted to finish up?
She was saying that she was confused between some judges that rule and it only seems to apply in their district, and some it applies nationwide. What is the difference there? Well, in the real world that we used to live in, a federal district judge only had jurisdiction in his district. The country is divided into judicial districts.
And how many? Like nine? I think is
yeah, about nine. There's about 11.
11? Okay.
Because there's 11th Circuit Court. Yeah. And some of these districts include more than one state because they're relatively big. The western states have small populations, so there's a lot in there. And what we're taught in law school is that when there's a ruling in one of these districts, you can cite it to another district
as if it's a prior ruling for you to support
as a precedent,
not a precedent, but
evidence
to persuade the court you should go this way because this judge did. All right. So it's persuasive. That's what the word I want. Jeez. It's persuasive, but not binding. So when the district judge rules, it means that anybody in his district is bound by that ruling. But these judges now have said, from now on, I'm ruling that this shall be done nationwide.
Oh, because the word federal is somewhere in my name.
Right. So nationwide, all federal districts are ruled now by my ruling, and in some cases, they've turned the plaintiffs into groups of plaintiffs, like the six Trendoagua people that are suing this judge. It includes all Trendoagua, anywhere in the country, any district. I mean, it's just gone insane, and there's no way that we can operate our government this way.
Well, I think the absurdity was shown when Pete Hegseth came out and said he was going to ask the transgender people to please leave the military. And Donald Trump is the commander in chief. Our Constitution says that. And all of a sudden the courts came out and said, you can't do that. Well, who's the commander in chief? I mean, that was such a blatant, unconstitutional move.
Yes, I agree, because the Supreme Court has ruled in the past that there is no right to be in the military. Therefore, you can't sue and say, I have a right, I'm transgender, and I have a right to be in the military. No, you don't. Commander-in-Chief determines who's going to be in the military. And we have standards that are reasonably related to the purpose that person shall serve in the military. And people that have gender dysphoria are not eligible to serve in the military.
You know, I'm going to even make it a more straightforward case that when I was in the service, and whether it was economic or whatever else, we went through what's called a reduction in force. Okay, reduction in force means I'm getting laid off from the military. Okay, however, I was getting laid off, but my rating was critical for a short period of time. So instead, I got extended, and I had to take the wonderful trip to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, whatever else, for a few months. And then I came back, and yes, I got laid off. But, it was the conflict of, well, if I'm important, why don't I get a reenlistment bonus? No, because you're not important. Well, the military has a way of deciding whatever it wants to decide. However, it is their purview to make that decision.
Yeah, they call it in my branch, they called it the needs of the Air Force.
That's right.
And yours, the needs of the Navy. Yeah,
that's right. And I had signed in order to follow those needs.
That's right. And they'll decide whether we need you or not. If we don't, take a hike.
Take a hike. So we are in the situation again where whatever Pete Hegseth had said and the president has declared, that's the way it should be.
Now, we had some really good news this week. Eden Alexander was freed after 584 days.
How ridiculous.
Being held by Hamas. He is believed to be the last living American hostage. Now, there are still...
Now, what does that mean? There are no other living hostages?
No, living American hostages.
Are there dead American hostages?
Yeah. I suspect they
were,
so.
Were there dead American hostages?
Yeah.
Really?
That's what they're saying.
Yeah, the same.
What are they saying now? There are 29 or so hostages left. Is it that low or is it higher? I don't know.
No, I think it's something like 29 that may be alive.
Yeah. And one of the testimonies I heard, they're not being kind to their hostages, but one group of hostages is being held in a tunnel, and above them is a whole bunch of explosives, and they have been told by Hamas, if the Israelis try to rescue you, we're going to set off those explosives and blow you to bits. So Hamas does not want any hostages rescued, and the IDF does not want Hamas holding the hostages any longer. So this is probably going to come to a head in the next couple of weeks, if not sooner.
Additionally, there was a statement that they were being tortured, may not be the right word, but intimidated because whoever was holding them hostage would throw in lighted papers, throw in papers or anything light to steal the oxygen out of the place where they were staying. So all of a sudden they were lack of oxygen. So it's intimidation.
They haven't been very nice. And somehow the Red Cross and the Geneva Convention has just not seemed to care very much.
Well,
the World Court.
You have to be a signatory to the Geneva Convention. Hamas is not a signatory.
What about the World Court?
Well,
what about the Red Cross? Don't they usually say something about mistreatment of people?
Well, I don't know. Has the Red Cross said anything about the hostages?
No.
Well, that's...
The silence is deafening, yeah.
Yeah, the silence is deafening.
What else are we going to do?
Speaking of Hamas and Islamic things, Texas has halted the construction of Epic City.
Was that the name of it?
Yes, Epic City. And it was being constructed near Dallas, a lot of acreage, I think it was 400 acres or something, I don't remember the exact number, with a mosque and schools, and it was supposed to be an intact Muslim community with, you know, they will operate as a Muslim community. Sharia law is banned in Texas, but I don't know if they had intended to honor that or not, but their children will be trained as Islamic children. And if you understand, particularly like in the Gaza Strip, those children are taught to be martyrs.
So would you explain to us how they have been able to even begin to build this city with permitting and inspections and blah, blah, blah?
They haven't begun to build it. It's at the planning stage.
Okay.
Because they have not complied with all the permitting rules.
Okay.
And they are being charged with violating, I believe it's the 14th Amendment, because they're limiting it to Muslims, but they're saying they're not limiting to Muslims, but they're limiting it to Muslims. And so the state of Texas is doing what they can to block it, because what you would create if you let this go through is a Gaza Strip in the middle of Texas. You would create a terrorist base.
Okay, I guess
these people don't want to assimilate.
Right. I got stuck on the statement when you said Texas holds construction on. It should have been of, because I thought when you said construction on, I thought it was already begun. So I'm glad that it's not already begun.
Well, the plans are laid out.
Okay.
And the land is bought. And that's another question. Where did the money for buying that much land come from?
That close to Dallas. I mean, that's a lot of acreage, isn't it?
Yes, that is a lot of acreage. But
and putting something like that in Texas would make a statement all by itself, because Texas is considered to be, I want to say the Alamo, but it fell. But, you know, one of the last real conservative bastions that
it's
we have.
It's a republic.
It's a very independent republic, yes.
Yeah. Like I said, I would say Alamo, but that wasn't a good analogy.
Yeah, so they're claiming that the First and Fourth Amendment are being violated by the fact that they're preventing people who are not Muslim from living there. And
do they identify any specific people that are involved in this where we could, you know, maybe look at legislators who are in support of this?
Well,
because what I'm referring to is in Dearborn, Michigan, and some other places around the country, we have kind of done that. We have just brought the immigrants into certain cities, Dearborn, Michigan, and made it like a no-go zone for anyone mm-hmm. that's not Muslim.
Well, that goes back to Henry Ford, because Henry Ford, as brilliant as he was a racist. He was an anti-Semite, and he was anti-black, and he did not want the black people coming up from the South and working in his factories. So he imported Arabs from the Middle East, and that's how Michigan became an Arab center in America. And then Obama imported a bunch of Somalis and concentrated them, and that's where we got Ilhan Omar.
That's in, Minnesota? Minnesota's got a large bastion as well.
Yes, and we've had situations where Christians have been arrested for giving out tracts on the street in those areas, because the constabulary, the police in those areas, many of them are Muslim police, and they will...
Speaking of Muslim police, in California now, you don't have to be a citizen to be a police officer.
Huh? But it's illegal to be there if they're there illegally, but you can be a police officer. So they can arrest themselves if they want to.
How are they expected to know the laws of the land and the Constitution if they're not citizens?
Exactly.
Not that our citizens know the laws of the land or the Constitution either.
And the truck drivers who now are complaining that they're losing their jobs because they can't read the road signs because they aren't proficient in English.
Yes, and that's a safety issue. We need to come back to that.
And how is a police officer supposed to talk to a driver if they stop them and there is no common language between them? Hmm. And okay, we're going to take a quick break. We will be right back. This is CCTA Wake Up Call. Again, thank you for listening.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. We're ready to head up our last segment.
I want to go back to what Kim said, because Trump did an executive order requiring all truck drivers in America to speak English. And I want to talk about the value of that order. A lot of our traffic signs now are not the ones that you see at the side of the road. They're the electronic things that are next to the highway or over the highway or whatever. And if you've got a driver that can't speak English, that doesn't know that there's an accident up ahead, or that there's been a spill of some sort, or there's a detour or whatever, or if you've got a driver that if traffic is stopped and being directed by a policeman who can't understand the directions that the policeman is giving, you've created a safety hazard.
Agreed. And if you think about the signs, not the digital signs, which is basically what you're referring to, but the normal road signs also have a picture. So, you know, a lot of them don't have writing on them, but have a picture so they know what to expect. But so much more of our cautionary signs are digital. All of the amber alerts are, all of the detour signs are, all of the construction up ahead next 5 miles, travel normal, 15-minute wait. If you go up towards Virginia on 17, there's a lot of digital signs that are directional.
Yeah. And it is a safety hazard to have drivers in the country who cannot successfully communicate in the language.
Agreed.
Driver's tests should be given in English only.
Agree.
Especially the CDL line ones.
Yes.
The commercial license, yeah. Let's head off into, again, circle back to some of the things that Trump had to deal with this within the past week or so. What's this most favored drug pricing? What is it called?
He wants us to pay, the government, to pay what the most favored nation pays for drugs. So whatever that lowest price is. I mean, we've complained for years that we pay more for drugs that are made and produced in America than they pay in Europe or the rest of the world. And the answer that we always get is that we're paying for the research costs. Apparently, those research costs aren't required to be paid by anybody but us.
And of course, we're also paying for all the ads that you see on TV that tell us to take those high-priced drugs.
Well, of course, but
Now, you had a comment about a specific drug here versus Britain.
Trump, if you watched Trump on TV last night, he was telling a story about how he came to do this particular EO. And he said he has a friend, he's a really high-level businessman who's overweight. And the businessman, he said, you'd know him if I told you his name. He says he's overweight. And so he called me and said, I'm taking the fat shot. I'm in London. I'm taking the fat shot. And Trump told him, well, it's not working. We don't deserve him. They have a thing on Greg Gutfeld's show. We don't deserve him where they come at. Well, anyway, the guy says, I just paid $88 for the shot. And in New York, I pay $1,300 for this shot. What the hell is going on here?
And that's a valid comment.
But, you know, ideologically, I have mixed feelings about it because I think we should pay the same that everybody else pays. However, I don't like the government involved in price fixing. Mm-hmm. So I have mixed feelings about it.
But I have a friend that I grew up with. I've known him since 3 years old. He's been a good friend. But he's up in Canada, and he was negotiating for a drug for the Saskatchewan, for the province, I think it was. He was negotiating, and he flat out, and it's the Viagra. So he was, this would go back in a few years, negotiating for the price for Viagra, and he just flat out told the drug companies, I will not pay for any of your advertising on football or any other shows or whatever else. He got a tremendous price that nobody in the United States could get. Why? Because he was unwilling to pay for all that extra baggage.
And his stock continued to go up, right?
That's right.
Speaking of stock, I think I mentioned that one time I was watching Greg Gutfeld, and this is when the burnings at Doge were really in the news, because they seem to have dropped off now. The outrage mob has moved on to other
outrage, yes.
Other outrages, yes. And that Tyrus has said, we should all buy 5 shares of Tesla stock and help him keep the price up. So I bought 6 shares. I think I bought 6 shares. And so I sent him $3,200, and I'm up to $4,400.
This is only a couple of weeks.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks.
So you did your good deed, and it paid off.
It paid off.
We did our good deed, too. We bought Newsmax stock, and it's up, too.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, got to keep the economy going.
Okay, so what else did President Trump do?
Our inflation rate is down.
2.4.
When
was the last time that the inflation rate was as low as it is now? I think they said
February of 2021.
And what happened in that month?
Well, Biden took over in January.
Yeah. That's when Trump left.
But also the amount of revenue that is coming in from the tariffs is amazing. And that is going to help us. You know, it's a drop in the bucket compared to the deficit, but at least it's a drop in the right direction.
And the tariffs, again, were renegotiated with China. So now they're paying 30% on everything coming into this country, and we're going to pay 10% on everything going to their country. So everybody thinks that that they got a better deal because they're paying 30%, which, folks, that's more than 10%. Mm.
30 is more than 10, yes.
Yes, it is. Okay.
Thank you, Bob.
How about the RAINS Act? What's the RAINS Act?
That is something being currently proposed in Congress to try to bring us back to where we started in terms of what our founding fathers had envisioned. And it says that any regulation that creates
a financial impact of $100 million or more has to go through Congress.
That's
right.
Has to
be voted on by Congress.
Because we're living by regulations. We're not living by laws. And how much money did having to change out your water heater or your shower head or get a dishwasher that takes 2 hours, How much money did that actually impact the consumers? And none of that was law. It was all regulation.
EPA.
Yeah.
Catalytic converters. Think of all the regulation costs that had gone into the price of a car.
Yeah. And now it has to go through Congress. And we get to vote on our congressmen. Obviously, we haven't done a very good job all the time, but we do get to vote for our congressmen. So we can now hold them accountable for their votes.
Tom Tillis.
Do we know, is ethanol fuel, which our fuel here, available here is 10% alcohol, is that from a regulation or is that from a law?
I believe that's a regulation, and it destroys engines, and we need to look at it again.
Because the water content.
Yeah.
And if it sits and gets stale, it'll shellac up whatever.
Well, the thing that bothers me about ethanol is that we're turning food into fuel.
Right, corn.
And there's, 8 billion people on this planet, and somebody needs to eat. And since we have oil and we can make gasoline that doesn't need ethanol, I think we need to get rid of ethanol.
And I think with ethanol, it takes fuel to make that fuel.
Right.
And I think it's a zero-sum gain.
And the same thing goes for we're taking farmland for solar panels.
Yes.
It's the same concept, Pat.
And not realizing, number one, the toxic material is in those panels. They have a limited lifespan, and the damage to the environment when they're done is greater than anything we could have. We wouldn't have done that much damage with other sources of energy.
And that doesn't even count the farmland that we're letting China buy up.
Mm.
Well, that's changed.
Where they ship the food to China.
And again, look at electric vehicles. Look at what goes on with electric vehicles, what goes into manufacturing them. There's no way that's green energy.
Mary, you earlier today, you had mentioned something about there was a battery recycling plant in South Carolina?
No, it was in a foreign country.
Scotland.
And it blew up.
And the effect is,
if you drove 1,000 diesel trucks for 10 years, that's the amount of pollution being released in the atmosphere.
Wow.
So we don't know what we're doing in terms of green energy.
No.
And until the science gets better and the free market steps in, we need to just put it aside till we get it right.
I have a quick change of topic. I want to know if anybody knows what's going on with Doge right now. It seems like we're not hearing much. I heard Elon was going to be backing out. But the last thing I heard was that they were considering inspecting or auditing or whatever the word is, some of the members of Congress. And does anybody know anything?
I have heard that. I don't have any more. He had a limited term because he was a temporary employee.
Yeah, well, this was limited more than they initially foresaw. I mean, I read an article today that said the bureaucracy won and Elon Musk lost.
Yes.
They
well,
went after
that.
Musk and his company said, you need to come back or we'll replace you. His stock plummeted. His sales of Cybertrucks went,
What about the investigating the Congress people? Is that happening?
Doge hasn't ended. Russ Vogt, he's one of Trump's guys, has taken over Elon Musk's place.
So Doge keeps on, but Musk is gone.
Okay. Musk is gone.
Well, I would like to see how some of these congressmen on $177,000 salary are multimillionaires in 6 years, AOC.
Yes.
Or Bernie Sanders flying in his private jets, yes.
Oh, you silly boy. We have to. We're so important. We have to get there in a hurry.
Okay. He doesn't want to sit in line.
I'm going to divert the conversation. Folks, I'm just going to remind you that this week coming up, we have on Thursday night at Stanley Hall Ballroom, we have a get-together for what's called Back the Blue. We're there to honor officers from Craven, Carteret, and Pamlico Sheriff's Offices, and also officers from New Bern and Havelock Police Department. So we're going to be honoring those officers. It will be at Stanley Hall Ballroom. It is at 6 p.m. And it is there's going to be some minor
light refreshments.
And I would just ask you to just come out and help us support those officers. And just, again, show that you want to stand strong.
Back the Blue.
Back the Blue. Yes. Okay, we have 1 minute to go. What do we have to really, really wrap this up?
The Democrat National Commission, or
David
committee.
David Hogg is on thin ice.
Yeah.
On.
Yay!
Yeah, that didn't work out the way they wanted it to.
Apparently, he slipped out something when he was on TV the other day and admitted that the Dems spent $2 billion to prop up Biden's economy before the election.
And apparently now they're saying that 400,000 jobs that Biden created never existed.
Never existed.
Wow.
So,
yeah, the Biden economy was questionable at best.
Well, I hadn't heard that. I had heard that he made a comment about that they just needed to go back and do what college kids did and get laid. That's what I heard.
He did say that.
He did say, okay. Folks, on that note, we're going to end the CCTA wake-up call.
Thank you for reminding us.
You have a great week.